Good morning. It is 10 a.m. this Wednesday morning, time once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran. Glad to be with you this morning. And today we've got a kind of a big topic. A lot of things going on right now in the city of Kenai. Some efforts to start looking at ways to kind of broaden the economic base in the city of Kenai. And so that's the conversation we're going to be having this morning. Very excited to do that. And to help us along with that conversation, we have from the city of Kenai, City Manager Paul Ostrander and Assistant City Manager Christina Cunningham. Christina and Paul, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Good to see you both.
Thank you for having us, Shaylin. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and so I guess to kind of start off, earlier this week, or perhaps it was even last week, time flies when you're having fun, I guess, some major changes made at the city of Kenai in terms of airport leases and land sales and those sorts of things. And I kind of wanted to use that as a jumping off point, because as we all know, here in the city of Kenai, that those airport lands that were designated by the FAA so many years ago have played a very integral role in the development of Kenai and the way that Kenai has grown up and all those sorts of things. So I think that's a very appropriate place to start with kind of looking at some of those policies and where they're at now and some of the changes that have been made. And so I guess looking at you, Christina, a couple weeks ago, you gave a very great presentation at the Industrial Outlook Forum that kind of detailed some of these. And so maybe you could kind of bring us up to speed on what are some of the goals or some of the changes that are being made in terms of those lease policies at the airport, and why are we doing this to begin with?
Yeah, so the airport is really just the start of our policy changes. That's the big code change we did. At the root of it is a working group at the city has been working for a year, meeting monthly, even more, getting input from outside sources, real estate, economic, aviation experts. We've had a couple consultants help us, and we put together this plan that is basically all part of what will one day be a land management plan. So we'll have a way to actively manage our lands, and the city just has an abundance of land. We're really unique in that way.
How much land are we talking about here with the airport altogether? What's that number?
353 subdivided parcels. So that might not even sound as big as it is if you look at the picture of it. it's a lot of acreage.
Yeah. That's how much acreage are we talking?
The acreage is a little bit harder to estimate. You know,
it's carved up in some interesting ways, and
that's
a little
why
bit
we
hard
need a
to
plan.
That's why these conversations start to begin with. Absolutely. Well, let's start there as kind of a baseline. You know, what are we looking at in terms of, you know, how much of that land is being used right now, and how much of that land is the city able to derive some income from, and how much potential is there for growth?
Well, the potential is just huge, because a lot of those lands, you know, are unknown quantities and unknown potential, because we haven't explored what each parcel's highest and best use is. We haven't looked at our lands like maybe a real estate group would, or someone who has managing an investment portfolio or asset portfolio would. So this land management plan would really look at each parcel and say, what could this be? What would be best here? And there's just so many opportunities, because we've got the airport, which is just the gem of the Kenai. It's this commercial hub. We've got the dock. We just have all these different unexplored potentials, and city land is really the key to unlocking those.
And if I could add to that, Shaylin,
yeah.
if we look at the land that the city owns, you know, and you look at it as from a vacancy rate perspective, we've only got about 18% of city lands that are actually working for the city right now. And that was one of the things we focused on, is, you know, how can we put more of the city's land to work? And you know, the premise behind this entire effort by administration and by the city council at the city was, and we actually, one of the first things we did as a working group was come up with a mission statement, or a why. You know, why are we doing this? What are we trying to accomplish as a city, in recognition that vacancy rate is so high? And we came up with a statement, our working group did, that said what we are trying to do is to encourage growth, development, and the thriving business community through reasonable and responsible land policies and practices. So that really is what guided us through this entire working group effort. And then It's what we presented to council, which, as you said, they approved at the last council meeting. And I think it's important to make a distinction here, too, that what council did approve last council meeting is the city-owned lands within the airport reserve. So they're a very unique set of lands in that they're restricted. We cannot sell those lands that are in the airport reserve. So this code change is specific to those. But we're definitely looking to expand that to include both city lands that are owned by the to benefit the airport, and are also general fund lands that are outside of that reserve. So we're going to expand this to include those, which will likely include, almost certainly will include, additional code modifications for those lands, as well as we're hoping additional policy and code changes that can again accomplish what our mission really is.
Yeah, and you mentioned we're talking about airport lands, which I think people are sort of generically kind of familiar with, but then general fund lands, what does that term mean, and what sorts of property does that encompass?
I can answer that.
Yeah.
Our general fund lands, that's just really a way of designating where the income goes or the revenue potential for the land goes, or how we acquired them. So general fund lands, they include our shore fishery leases. They include a lot of those lands where there are parks, the wetlands, that sort of thing. There's also properties that the city has gotten through foreclosures or through donations, private donations, or the state has deeded us land. So there's all this variety of lands out there that are basically anything non-airport is considered general fund.
Right. What's so? And then obviously the airport is the biggest moneymaker, but outside of that, is it? Would it be like the city dock, or what's the sort of second banana in terms of a good revenue generator for the city?
That's a really good question. So the focus of our attention as a city for historically has always been on our airport. That's the airport is much bigger than just stuff around the runway. It extends through, it encompasses the whole city center. So the second highest revenue potential for our city lands is really just outside of that. That's still within the city, the heart of the city, but we have all of those several tidelands leases. So they're not shore fishery leases, but they're where the canneries are. And,
okay.
And those are the second probably biggest income.
Yeah.
And I'll add to that also that the focus isn't on revenue generation. You know, the focus is really about, like I said, it's about encouraging growth development within our community. So often, particularly in the past, we have been focused on strictly revenue generation. How can we increase the amount of monthly or annual recurring revenue that we get, both for the airport and for the general fund? But we've recognized that there are additional benefits to the city and to the airport if we can encourage that business community to grow. Certainly, property taxes, sales taxes, employment, quality of life, all those things are benefits outside of that revenue generation. So I don't want people to think that we are looking to focus on revenue generation, because that isn't what we're focused on at all.
Yeah. So you mentioned some other things that might maybe be a little bit more difficult to quantify than in terms of what some of these goals are. Maybe you could expand on that a little bit and some of that stuff that might not always show up just in the numbers.
Yeah. And I think that's really why we wanted to have a mission statement, why we wanted to have something we could check in with and say, you know, is what we're doing or recommending, is it fit with where we're really looking? Because sometimes we would get off on revenue. And I think that the analysis that we've always done as a city has been a financial analysis. And we were really looking at things more with an economic analysis, where we take into consideration those factors that Paul mentioned. And so a lot of that almost came down to us reorienting ourselves and putting ourselves in the shoes of business owners and the residents in Kenai, and really just thinking, you know, what if you're a business owner and you walk into City Hall, what does that look like? You know, how can we improve on that experience? How can we streamline our processes? How can we make them more friendly?
Yeah, that was something that I've heard you mention here recently, is this idea that the city staff is going to take on maybe a little bit more work in terms of that front end kind of red tape sort of thing, that at least for me, as I was hearing some of this and doing a little story about it, I thought, maybe even I could figure out how to fill out the paperwork to start a business. And it sounds like maybe that's the goal, to be a little bit more open to what is your idea. Let's see if we can walk through this, as opposed to coming in with, you know, the same sort of a thing that you would present to a financial backer to get an investment opportunity or something.
Yeah. I mean, and I think I told you when I talked to you on the phone the other day, Shailen, you know, we are trying to act like what really we are at our core, which is a service company, a service industry. Our organization should be serving the community, serving its residents. And when you have a potential business owner, or a business owner that maybe had something in town for years, they should really look to City Hall as their partner. And we should collaborate with them to make them successful. And we really need to do what we can to make the process as easy as we possibly can. So I'm not sure it really would be considered a shift, but a focus on serving and being that service industry that I think we should be.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in talking about this idea of trying to broaden horizons a little bit in that area, you know, I can already hear folks kind of mumbling a little bit about, well, we've tried this before, and economic development as done by the city has been sort of started in fits and starts before. And you can look at the industrial park, which maybe hasn't met every expectation that was set forward by Ed and things like that. And so are those challenges to getting some of these goals met and achieving that mission statement? Or do you see those as more opportunities where you can look at that as a lesson and go, that's maybe we took some wrong turns here. And so here's how we turn it back around.
You know, I see a distinction here in that, you know, you're talking about specific economic development things that the city has pursued, which is, you know, as you say, the industry park. This is really about facilitating private businesses to succeed in the Kenai. So it's not necessarily us looking to take the driver's seat here and trying to create these economic development opportunities, but create an environment where a private entity can come in and be successful in our community.
That's something actually that as I was kind of jotting down some notes before the show and thinking about this a little bit, a lot of times when you hear about municipalities, regardless of size, whether it's Atlanta, Georgia, or Kenai, Alaska, so many times you hear that conversation framed in financial terms. What's the city doing to attract business? Usually that takes the form of tax breaks or cheap land or something like that. But there's also, and you hear about it sometimes, but not quite as often, that the better thing for a municipality maybe to do is, as you mentioned, to create that environment where you've got an educated and diverse workforce, where you have lots of recreation opportunities and a nice place to live and great health care and all those things that beyond the finances would make someplace tops on a list to begin with. And then you can start talking about money. And that seems to be, maybe that's a little bit more of the goal here, as opposed to just strictly managing land.
I think absolutely. One of the things we've talked a lot about is, you know, what can we do better, but also, you know, inviting business in and saying, you know, we're welcoming business. So we don't want anything. We might be versed in the history or the code or whatever, but, you know, someone walking in off the street, it's a foreign language, and it almost requires that a city person walk you through the process. And I'm excited when someone comes in with an idea. I'm worried that there's people out there that are just like that, walking in the door and overcoming that big hurdle right now or before this change that was just approved by council. You know, there was a big documentation requirement, upfront stuff you had to figure out as a potential lessee at the city or if you were interested. It was just, what we want to create is sort of this environment where you come in and it's like a package. You can take it home and look at it. It's easy to figure out. It's easy to fill out. And some of the work is pre-done for you. So you're not having to sort of from scratch become my job and then do it for me for you.
Right. Yeah. It's a fair amount of consulting work, I guess, is one way you could kind of look at that.
Yeah, I love the idea that what we're doing is we're just doing a lot of groundwork, and so we're getting the ground ready. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, you know, economic development and the stuff that cities do to promote opportunities, but Kenai is unique in that we have so much land, and we've been fortunate as a city to have other industries that we haven't had to tap into that land resource. And right now, talking about idle lands, it's one of the city's greatest assets.
Yeah, so I'm curious, you know, sitting here at the beginning of 2018, and we're just starting to get this program, I'll call it a program, kind of off the ground and get some things started and get, again, some of the baseline work done in terms of changing the code and getting things moving in a general direction. What do you see from right now as the biggest opportunities for meeting that overall goal of broadening the economic base and providing a really great zone for people to do business? What's the big opportunity?
Well, as Christine said, there's a lot of opportunity because we have a lot of land in the city. You know, I do think that if you look at much of our land, what we haven't done is we haven't done a true analysis of what we have. And a big component of this project is what we're calling our land management plan, where we look at every single parcel that the city owns, and we determine, you know, we look at the basics of that property, you know, what type of property is, where is it located. We also determine the highest and best use of that property, and then we come up with a recommendation on how what the city should do with that property. So that in and of itself is going to create this inventory where if a person is interested in coming to the city and doing business with the city, we've got all that information right in front of us. So I think that's important.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, I was just going to say, too, you know, when you drive through the city of Kenai, you see a lot of businesses that are maybe on the downward spiral, like, and some of those businesses are leases that don't have an incentive to improve their buildings because they're in the end life of their lease, and there's really nothing in the structure of the lease that it incentivizes them to maintain it. So that's another thing we looked at, you know, how can we structure our leases so that, you know, there's an incentive to maintain buildings. And when you look at vacant land in Kenai, you know, there's this great potential for more retail, for transportation type businesses, mm-hmm. for all these different sectors to be in Kenai. So why hasn't that happened? And we don't want, you know, our policies and practices to be such a big hurdle that those lands remain vacant.
Yeah. And well, and what are some of those discussions like in terms of having to, I'm thinking, you mentioned that specific kind of a scenario. I'm thinking, you know, the bowling alley, I feel like, is a great example. It's this really prime chunk of real estate right there on the Spur Highway. And gee whiz, you'd think that there would be somebody wanted to take it, but the building needs some work and this and that. So yeah, how is that discussion going?
Yeah, and I would love to have Paul talk specifically about the bowling alley. I can say in general, there are buildings where the reason why, if I'm the lessee, I'm not improving my building is because at the end of my lease, that building reverts to the city.
Right.
It's not, you know.
You don't own it.
I don't own it. Yeah. Why would I improve on it? At the end of the, you know, there's all these things. So we looked at, you know, what can we do to change that? You know, what can we do to make people maintain their buildings if they're under lease, and what can we do at the end of the lease so that there's something for the lessee? Also, our lease structure makes it difficult to renew or extend, so these lessees are in the position where it's difficult to sell.
Yeah,
because they have a short life and a maybe a poorly maintained building.
And we will be putting together a structure that will allow that. Really what we're talking about is the exit strategy for lessees. You know,
right.
They've been there, they've built their business, they've been there for 20 or 30 years, but as Christine said, there's no real incentive to improve the building, and if they want out, it's really difficult the way that our code is structured right now. We're going to change that, and there are specific things that we have done. You know, Christine alluded to, you know, renewal and extension of leases. Previously, it was really difficult to even figure out what the difference between the two was. So we've made sure we defined those. We put some provisions in there. One specific example is, let's say we've got a business that's been here for 30 years. They're near the end of their lease. One, we're allowing them to convert that lease so that they now own the improvements. So that's a big shift. So it's basically that asset that they have built on their own. In the current lease, the city owns it. We're going to shift that. So in fact, they will now own those improvements. And then they can renew it. It used to be in the past that if you wanted to renew your lease, you would have to put a significant amount of additional investment into the building. What we recognize now is if you've got a business that's been there for 30 years and it's still profitable and you're still employing a number of folks and it's providing benefit to the city, we should recognize the fact that there is value that you already have there and apply that to a renewal. So it gives them an opportunity to renew their lease for a significant term beyond what they would have previously been able to do under the existing code. So really it's about, again, looking at it from the business perspective and saying, we got to figure out how to make this an environment that they can succeed and that they want to continue to operate in the city.
When you talk about a business owner sort of owning the equity that they put into a building that's city owned, what does that mean? Does that mean like they get a cut? Does that mean they get to walk off with the air conditioner at the end of the lease? What does that mean?
Well, the way it's written right now is, let's take an example of a lease where they don't own the improvements. At the end of that lease, the city owns the improvements and the city can do whatever they want with it. Under the new lease form, they actually have ownership, which means they have a couple of options at the end. They can sell that asset and get the value of the asset. The second, I believe, is that the city can actually auction it for them. And the third is that they can remove the improvements. Now, how reasonable is it? Sometimes you can remove improvements,
right.
Probably not. But the biggest difference is that previously they couldn't sell that asset because they didn't own it. Now there's value there. They can sell that lease, sell the improvements, and they can receive value for that improvement.
And this is speaking to me as someone who rents, because it feels like you're getting a little bit more of an ownership stake, but without necessarily taking on the burden of ownership altogether. As you said, there are some incentives there to feel like more of an owner, but not necessarily take full ownership. Because as I've heard discussed on numerous occasions, that just the basic math of it is that it always makes more sense for the city with all these lands to lease rather than sell. Is that Christine's nodding yes, yeah.
That's the financial analysis. And the financial analysis doesn't take into consideration some of the things our working group talked a lot about, which is the economic things Paul mentioned, but also even this sort of maybe more nebulous concept that a landowner is perhaps a better steward than a land lessee, and how to value that factor of it, that we want people invested in our community, not just in our, on our giving us lease payments.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. And that's a great word, that nebulous word. We kind of started off the conversation talking about some of these things that are part of this goal of expanding the economic base of the city of Kenai that aren't maybe so easy to track on paper, that aren't so easy to quantify all the time. And maybe we could get into some of those. What do you see, Christine, as some of those things? Does it mean, more parks? Does it mean,
Okay, so what I see or what I advocate for when I'm talking to this group, so I'm pretty well versed in city lands because I've been on that side of it at the city hall and understand the history and the complexities of our code. But when I live in Kenai and I drive through town, you know, I remember Kenai was so cool as a young person to come to. Old town, the beach. I mean, we've got all this great stuff, and I see how, you know, maybe there's some disconnected pathways or roadways or things. And I love what our Parks and Rec department is doing now with our trail plan and connecting some of those things, you know, getting more involvement and so people can maybe walk like the old town walking route. And there's just some things that aren't known. I almost feel like Kenai is this big secret, because where else in Alaska, if you're going to pick a place to live, you know, where do you want to live that has this, you know, great temperature connected to the road system? We've got this airport, beaches, mountains. Where else do you want to live?
This is turning into a little bit of an advertisement. But hey, we all live here, so I guess it rings true on some level, right?
Well, and I will tell you, Christine is probably our greatest marketer, because I've heard that exact statement many times from her.
Why would you want to live anywhere else?
Right. Well, and that is a component of this, too, is advertising the city. And mm-hmm. We haven't done a very good job of marketing our city and talking about the great aspects of our city, and the airport is another example. We haven't done a very good job of marketing the potential for businesses to locate on our airport. I mean, it is arguably our greatest asset, and we don't do a very good job of marketing it. But just talking about our city and the things that make us unique, and talking about, you know, why you would want to live here and why you would want to do business here, we need to continually have that conversation, because it is a great place to live. I mean, and I'm going to continue to say that, Shailen. I'm sorry.
I expect nothing less. No, that's fantastic. In talking about that, you know, I'm curious. Earlier this summer, you and I talked a couple of times about it, and it was kind of big news that the city of Kenai was this DipNet app that was developed within the city administration to do a lot of things. But I'm curious how much that played into going in this direction. Is you all of a sudden you've got this app and you realize there's a lot of potential for this, perhaps, and how can we use this as a jumping off point? What else can we do? Where else can this go? I mean, it seemed like that might have maybe nudged the door open a little bit. Or maybe I'm reading too much into it. I don't know.
I'm not sure I could say there's a direct link between the DipNet app.
Correlation is not causation, but
policy. But, you know, it is another attempt by the city to embrace, in this example, the DipNet app, really embracing the fact that, you know, the personal use fishery is here, and we need to somehow figure out how we can maximize the benefit of that fishery to the city, which was really the idea behind the DipNet app. Improve the experience of the participants in the personal use fishery, but also let them know about the opportunities they have off the beach and in town. So.
Yeah. And that's something that I, moving ahead, as I understand it, the Chamber of Commerce is going to be getting involved with that and really make that a push to, you know, keep the folks who are streaming in their RVs for those 3 weeks in July to maybe see if we can get them to hang around for a couple of extra days and not necessarily get in everybody's way, but, you know, drop a few dollars on their way out of town. Seems to be maybe.
Yeah, no, that's the objective. We actually had a meeting with the Chamber yesterday specifically about, well, three things, actually, the DipNet app. And we talked specifically about how they were going to increase the advertising on the app itself. So again, so when you have a user that's using that app, that they see some of the things that are in town and they can come and visit. We also talked about the Silver Salmon Derby, which we got the permit already for, which is far earlier than we did before. And the Chamber is going to have an active role in that as they did last year. So we talked about those things with the Chamber yesterday. We also talked about the Eagle Cam,
Which
we are going to make some improvements this year with the Eagle Cam, try to make it a little bit better, bring in some outside folks to provide some support. And those are all just things that we're looking to do to try to focus on the city of Kenai, focus on the uniqueness of our town, and bring people here.
Yeah. And as we kind of get to the bottom of the hour here, it's been a while since I've taken a look at the Eagle Cam. Have I missed any interesting developments lately? Bring me up to speed. Anything cool?
There is nothing right now. The Eagles have flown the nest for now. But they should be back. I think they start coming back sometime in March.
So. All right. So right around the corner. It'll be time to tune back into the Eagle Camp for the city of Kenai. Well, Paul Ostrander, Christine Cunningham joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, talking a lot about economic development, broadening the economic base, what possibilities are out there for the city of Kenai in the near term and in the long term. And we're going to continue the conversation, grab a little break here at the bottom of the hour. This is KDLL. Stay with us. And welcome back to the Kenai Conversation this morning here on KDLL, joined with Kenai City Manager Paul Ostrander and Assistant City Manager Christine Cunningham, talking all about a new sort of direction the city is trying to go in terms of developing the local economy and encouraging new and different types of business, different business partners for the city, and all of the background work and all the homework that goes into creating a place where all these new things are possible. And that's what I kind of wanted to get into as we get into the second half of the program. You mentioned all these acres of land and all these different parcels of land that the city owns and was bequeathed by the FAA and the relationship with the airport. And that's all kind of its own thing. But I'm curious, you mentioned taking an inventory of all these lands and trying to figure out best uses, best practices, all of these sorts of things. And the first question that I had is, my goodness, how daunting a task is it to take an inventory of all these different parcels that are kind of far flung and present unique, you know, there's a lot of difference from one end of town to the other end of town in terms of topography and all these things. So maybe talk a little bit about that process of inventorying these things and how that's going to shape up. Christine?
Yeah, so obviously we're going to look at each parcel individually. We'll actually getting into the inventory, we'll look at where the parcel came from, what deed restrictions it might have, what reversionary clauses, you know, what came with the land. We'll look at zoning. We'll look at what the potential of the property could be. you know, what are businesses surrounding the area? You know, what are the characteristics on the property? What type of property is it? That sort of thing. And then, and we'll basically, it's going to, the inventory part of it is just basically a lot of data entry and note taking. And for 353 parcels, you're basically building a database. And then once you have that, that's when the analysis begins. And one thing that Paul had talked about was that we would then take these analyses probably by group. So we would group different like lands and take them to council one at a time, rather than present this at opus to council in one big meal.
Right.
We would probably have like a 7-course.
Kind of roll it out in phases. Yes. And yeah, because when you start talking about changes like this, and you mention kind of the 4-letter word, there's zoning that might be involved here, that gets people's attention. And so I imagine that the strategy is a little bit to roll it out slowly and do it a little piece at a time, because it is a big change, and that's not something that you want to do overnight. It's completely changed the face of how people view the use of city lands, I guess, is essentially what we're talking about, right?
Right, and there's interesting little things that are going to get cleaned up. It's like a house cleaning. You're gonna find old things, and we have some properties that have been set aside by ordinance for a fire hall, when Wildwood was a military base. And
right.
Things. So it's like those ordinances have restricted that land without being revisited. So it's gonna, a lot of it's gonna be a revisiting. And then ultimately, once we have all this data and analysis and pieces and parts approved, it's something that we could incorporate into our comp plan.
Yeah, and that's always interesting to me, is when you start incorporating things into the comp plan, because I feel like a question for folks a lot of times is, well, how much does a comp plan matter anyway? You put a lot of money and time and effort into doing this, and then you seem to never hear about it again. But the truth is, it's a guiding document, and just because it doesn't get pulled out for every single city council meeting and every decision that gets made, that's something that's sort of built into the decision-making process a little bit.
Yeah, and I look at the comp plan a lot more than most, maybe.
part of the job description.
Right. I mean, I look at the comp plan, and I think it's also a community agreement that this is what we want. And I think that that's cool to have. It's not just a book you take off the shelf to beat yourself over the head with when you can't do what it says, because it's a living document too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in regards to the land management plan as well, it is a daunting process that we were headed off. But to say that it's a significant change, I mean, we are trying to create a culture here that we talked about earlier, that it's going to hopefully support this thriving business community. But as far as the land management plan, I don't think you're going to see any of these monumental changes. You know, we're not going to be suggesting things that land be developed in a way that is going to shock people. I don't think you're going to see that. It's really about just inventorying the land and putting that plan together so it's there and available. You know, as we sit now, someone can come to the city and want to do something on a piece of property, and we can't tell them, well, yeah, that's appropriate for that piece of property. We want to be able to actually give them this plan and say, hey, you want to locate here. Here's the lands we have. Here's their highest and best use. Here's the way we'd want to use them. See if your business proposal will fit into what we have available.
Mm-hmm.
So it monumental change, probably not. But it's more about clarifying what we have, figuring out what we have, and figuring out the best way to use it.
As you go through this process of creating this inventory and what I imagine is an unbelievable amount of spreadsheet work that I'm not jealous about at all, what kind of opportunity will there be for public input on some of these things? I'm thinking, you know, folks have a very strong opinion of how they want land to be used, especially when you get to the residential neighborhoods. I'm thinking, you know, Lawton Acres is a sticking point for development and those sorts of things. So what kind of opportunities will there be for residents to weigh in and say, you know what, this would be a good idea, or I don't think that that's a good idea at all?
There's going to be an extensive public process that we'll go through for all of it. You know, everything goes to council. It may be that depending on the group that's in front of council, they might even want to have a specific work session on that where the public will be invited. Even without the work session, though, I mean, we're going to be going through the ordinance process where it's going to be introduced. There's going to be a public hearing, at least one, potentially more. So there's going to be significant opportunity for the public to to provide their input, and I'm sure in some cases we will get a lot of it.
I'm quite certain of that, but that's what it's there for. Everybody gets 3 minutes, and in this case we get a little bit more than 3 minutes, which is great. And again, thanks to Paul Ostrander and Christine Cunningham for being here on the Kenai Conversation this morning, talking all about Kenai City lands and future plans for those, and how we're keeping track of all those things. We've talked a little bit about, you know, what some of those opportunities are. Airport, of course, presenting a huge opportunity just for what we're talking about, for all these land use purposes. I'm curious about what some of the challenges are, and I'll give you a very specific example of what, at least maybe in our experience here at the radio station in North Kenai, has been, is, and for folks around Kenai probably can relate to this, is internet access. That's not unique to Kenai, is having trouble with internet access, but I've been anxious to ask this question for some time, because getting back to that DipNet app, I remember talking to the city's IT director, Dan Castamore, and this was a great quote. I loved it. He said, when that thing went live, we were inundated with traffic. We couldn't handle it. And we called the local internet service provider, and they moved mountains to be able to make us handle more traffic. And I'm curious how much of a sticking point that is in terms of internet access, technology. What kind of a role do those things play in this sort of grand scheme of moving into a new era, sort of a thing?
Well, I think in this day and age, it's critical that folks have good access to the internet. And it's interesting because in most of the world, it's, you know, you need at least a 20 meg connection to be considered high speed internet. And in many of the areas, certainly not only in Kenai, but in the entire peninsula, if you have 20 megs, everyone's envious. But in typical, yeah, you know, lower 48, 20 megs, you know, if you don't have 20 megs, then you don't have high speed. I mean, that's the definition. I do think that we're going to see improvements here with the existing internet providers, potentially even with new internet providers moving in, because I do think that there is an element of the population who would choose not to live somewhere singularly on that for that reason. They don't have sufficient internet to do what they want to do, maybe not only in their business life but also personally. Mm-hmm. And that is probably a deterrent to some folks moving in, but I do think we're going to see improvements in that regard in the relatively near future.
Yeah, and something else that you hear a lot of times, or I hear story after story after story about the exodus of workers from, you know, brick and more people working remotely and working from home and all sorts of online entrepreneurship. You know, imagine how many more people would want to live in remote places if they had the internet access to be able to do whatever it is they wanted to do. And I'm curious, you know, another story that I've seen pop up is more and more municipalities seem to be willing to take on, I guess you'd call it the utility burden of providing internet access. And from what I'm hearing, you know, we've got local internet access service providers here, possibly others looking to do business here. It doesn't sound like something maybe that the city is really too interested in looking at right now, is providing that service.
You know, I have talked to Dan about this at length, actually, and, you know, there's a couple different ways that the city, I think, could help here. You know, whether or not we want to go all the way to actually being that service provider, that's not certainly a discussion that I've had yet, but there are some things that we can do. You know, we've got infrastructure throughout the city that can help support internet service providers. You know, we've got tower infrastructure, we've got buildings. So some of these things can help support these internet service providers, and we're certainly interested in pursuing that if it makes sense for them.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, as we all know, it's one of those chicken and egg things. You know, you've got to have people there to pay for the service, but you can't pay for the service until you have people, and then back and forth we go, and here we are waiting to watch Netflix buffer. But that's just how it is. Anyway, that was me on my little horse a little bit about internet speeds. That's, I don't know. Anyway, we talked a little bit about different land uses, and I'm curious about parks around the city, because there are a number of parks around the city, and I don't know that they maybe have. You can tell me what sort of image that the city wants to have for them, or how high profile people the city would like them for them to be. But, you know, you look at the city of Soldotna, and they've figured out a way to turn at least one of their parks into kind of a moneymaker. And I've heard similar ideas like that batted around within the city of Kenai. I'm curious what parks and some of that other sort of recreational city infrastructure, what role that plays in all of this?
Well, it certainly plays a role. I mean, the quality of life is a big component to attracting people to your city. And, you know, what our parks and rec department is focusing on right now is really a trails component to our parks. So we're trying to make our parks more accessible by folks that want to walk or bike. So our Parks and Rec Commission has been working on a trails plan. We're looking to actively expand trails. And the connectivity of the trails is the one thing that I think we're really missing. We have actually a number of trails throughout the city, but they don't connect. And if you can create that connectivity, it creates an environment where people can get on our trails and they can do a large loop through our parks, out in the areas outside of our parks. So parks play a huge role in again, the quality of life of the residents there. And I think the trail component is really critical to allowing people to access those and enjoy them more.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I'm kind of curious about is in terms of looking for new opportunities and that sort of thing. And you mentioned just in terms of internet service providers and finding some partnerships and ways to work together. What are some avenues that you could see partnerships maybe maybe it's the borough or maybe the city of Soldotna. I know that there have been some kind of big ideas kicked around in terms of like water and sewer and some of those sorts of things. Are there other avenues for opportunities for partnerships in that realm with our neighbors?
I think we always need to be open for that. You know, that the most recent discussion, as you mentioned, was maybe the wastewater collection system mm-hmm. could come all the way to Kenai. And I know the mayor of Soldotna and Vice Mayor Navarre were both quoted in saying that that's something that we should look at. And I do think that long term that can make some sense. So yeah, can we cooperate and collaborate with our neighbors? I think we absolutely need to look at that. And it's something that I know the city of Soldotna is interested in improving and expanding the relationship with the city of Kenai, and the city of Kenai is certainly open for that as well. And with the borough, you know, is another example. There are ways that we can probably create efficiencies by cooperating with the borough. There was an effort by the borough several years ago to potentially combine 911 and into one entity at the borough. And actually, when I came over as a city manager, I looked at it from a different perspective than when I was at the borough. But I looked at that very closely and analyzed whether it made sense for the city. And in the end, it was really close, but we determined that it didn't make sense. But I think you always have to be open and available for those discussions and look at it and do your due diligence and figure out whether or not it makes sense mm-hmm. to collaborate. But you should always be open for that.
Yeah. You know, recently, you know, I've had some conversations sort of at the borough level about the AK LNG project. But it's been a while since I had an opportunity to talk with somebody at the city level in Kenai about what's going on with that. I mean, as we all know, there's a lot of promise and hope that maybe even like shovels in the ground, some work will get done this year yet. What are those conversations like at the city? Are we, you know, kind of holding our breath, wait and see, or are there concrete plans and ideas for how to handle what might be coming down the road?
You know, as far as concrete plans and what we handle, it's pretty difficult to say that we have that right now. Certainly, we're interested. We're keeping an eye on the progress that AGDC is making, consistently trying to follow what's going on. I mean, there was an article in the paper today, you know, claiming that, you know, China was very interested in this project and it would happen. It seems like there has been a shift over the last 4 to 6 months, mm-hmm. Where I think there was a lot of people that thought that the project was dead 6 months ago. And now there seems to be renewed interest, a real renewed possibility that this thing will happen. It will completely change the city of Kenai and the surrounding area if that does happen. You know, so we're really with everyone else in this wait and see mode. I mean, if over the next 6 to 8 months, I think we will have some real indicators if this is real. And if that happens, then we're going to take a real serious look at it. One of the things that I did talk to DOT actually about was using some DOT funds to do some planning for that specific purpose. And there is planning dollars available at the state level that we could use to figure out what we do need to prepare for if this LNG project happens. So that might be something that we will pursue depending on what happens over the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, this coming up this construction season or actually leading up to this construction season is going to be very telling about what sort of the prospects are for the very near term on that project for sure. You know, one area that we haven't talked about and it's become part of the city's economy and part of its economic base has been cannabis. And I'm curious, is that it seems like every time I go to a borough meeting, there's a huge list of new businesses that are open for getting licensed. And what's that climate? Are there a lot of cannabis businesses begging to do business in the city of Kenai. Of course, Kenai had the first retail shop on the peninsula, and it's still open. It seems to be doing quite well and all those things. But I guess, how is that industry going with the city, and what are its prospects for the future? Do you see a lot of growth there? Is that an opportunity? Anybody want to
call? Yeah, I'll take that one, Shailen. So, you know, we do continually have applicants for new cannabis businesses in the city. We've got a retail application that actually went in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission last month. It's actually been appealed to the Board of Adjustment, and that is coming up in February. But we do have continued interest, continued growth in that industry. You know, the limitations here in the city are similar to the limitations pretty much everywhere else, in that the buffer distances that are included in our code are going to limit the number of businesses that can locate here. You know, there's not a finite number that we would allow, but the fact that these buffer distances are in place is going to limit the growth somewhat. But we do see continued interest, and from all indications, the businesses that are located in the city have been successful.
Yeah. I'm bringing up that buffer distance, you know, that, again, that gets back to this kind of idea of zoning purposes and this idea of being kind of forward thinking about sort of what's next on this. And I guess, in terms of a timeline, I know this is, you used the word earlier, Christine, kind of nebulous, but I am interested, you know, what is kind of a timeline? We've seen a little bit of work done at the council level in adopting some ordinances and improving some ordinances and making some sort of systemic changes in what's on code at the city. But in terms of a rollout and trying to get some more of these goals accomplished for this large overarching plan, what kind of a timeline are we looking for? Will Kenai look completely different in 15 years?
Kenai will look different in 15 years.
Completely? Probably not completely, yes.
You know, and timelines are tough.
Right.
When we started down this path, I came in as a new city manager 2 months in. I was like, yeah, we're going to have this thing knocked out in 5-6 months. And here we are almost a year later. So I don't really want to put ourselves in a box here, but I will tell you that we are going to actively move into the next phase of this project, which, you know, the first phase was on airport. Those are a unique set of lands. Those are on airport. We're going to move into this next phase now, which is off airport, which includes both general fund and airport lands. You will see a code change ordinance come in front of council probably sometime in the next couple of months in that regard. We're going to work through that. Certainly the land management plan, as we talked about, is something that you're going to consistently see come in front of council probably over the next year to 18 months. I mean, mm-hmm. It is a significant lift for the city. We may need to bring in some outside help to help us get through that in a timely manner. So you're going to continue to see things come through. And I also think that beyond a code rewrite for those off-airport properties and the land management plan, we are also interested in pursuing some of these incentive-type programs that are maybe more common in other municipalities. When you talk about, you know, property tax incentives, those types of things, to incentivize folks to improve their existing businesses, you'll see some of those things coming out of administration as well over the next year. So it's going to be an ongoing project. I'm not even sure we'll know when we're at the definitive end of this project.
Right.
But we're going to continue to work through this and again, try to accomplish the mission that we set for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's an ever evolving kind of a thing. And it's super interesting in that way, because it's, as you said, there are goals, but it's not necessarily an end goal, not necessarily a finish line as we would typically think about those things. We're kind of winding down a little bit. I wanted to talk about downtown Kenai, as kind of whatever that means. Downtown Kenai, we have a little, I'll say this, we have a slightly more well-defined downtown Kenai than perhaps other municipalities around the peninsula. Again, that's just my two cents. But there's some new things going on. Is it an arcade there by the movie theater on Main Street? Are there other things popping up that are going to be exciting for folks?
Yeah, well, that's the Extreme Fun Center is what you're referring
to. Yeah, I mean, without putting on your Chamber of Commerce hat, I'm just...
Yeah, so the Extreme Fun Center is right there in Willow, and then adjacent, of course, is the old Canby Theater, which was sold last year. And there are plans to improve that facility and expand it, bring us a movie theater that is probably more like what you'd see in other communities, the stadium-type seating, you know, really really good movie theater there, and I know they're hoping to break ground on that this year. So those two things right next to themselves are certainly exciting for the city. I know that there's also been a building permit for a new restaurant in the old Blockbuster building, so that's something that hopefully we'll see happen over the next couple of months. You know, one of the big components, when you talk about downtown Kenai, it is hard to define. But the one area that I think is easy to define is Old Town Kenai. And
right,
I think
yeah.
that's an area that has an enormous amount of potential. But we're never going to realize that potential unless we can finally get this bluff stabilization project completed. And, you know, that is something that has been a focus of the city for 40 or more years. We are so close now to having a real project, closer than we've ever been, no question. And we should have an indication in April whether or not this project is a go. Now, what happens in April is they basically give us the green light saying, hey, you can go to design, you can construct this project, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done by the city with our congressional delegation at that point to make it a reality. But, you know, we have been making, you know, significant progress and consistent progress over the last year since I've been here. There was a lot of this put in place before I came on as city manager. But I think that we have a really good shot, certainly better than 50%. I'd say a very good shot that this thing is going to happen for real.
And my thought is if the green light does happen, that really opens up some things in terms of planning for the city, because now you've taken this big question mark off the table about, are we going to have to worry about moving the senior center in 10 or 20 years? All of a sudden, that question is pretty much off the table. And so, I have to feel like that a project of that magnitude and of that scope and that importance really opens some things up for the city.
Well, you talk about business opportunities. I mean, you look at Old Town, and you know, you look at that bluff, and I mean, that's unique to the city. I mean,
yes.
the view shed from there is just unbelievable, but no one is willing to invest in
right.
a bluff that's actively eroding 3 feet every year. You're not gonna buy the property. You're certainly not gonna invest in it. So I think what it's done is it's really stagnated any type of growth in that area. But if you can stabilize that bluff and say, okay, we've taken care of that issue, that land in that area then becomes an area that I think you'll see enormous growth, because
mm-hmm.
it's a true gem there, right on the bluff. And some of the opportunities there, I think,
yeah.
are great.
And that would probably tie into, Christine, you mentioned the idea of making the city a bit more connected and somewhat pedestrian friendly, which is kind of a foreign notion in a lot of places in Alaska. We like to be off on our own, and if that means you got to drive a little bit, well, hey, that means you got to drive a little bit. But I feel like there is beginning to be more and more of a push to get things a little bit more connected and to, you know, we talk about these, again, nebulous areas of like downtown, but to actually define that and have it be a destination kind of a place where you can walk around and be connected to everything. That seems like a goal, and there are opportunities for that.
Yeah, and I one of the things I was looking at, and I don't remember where it ended up after it went to the Parks and Rec Commission, but that trails plan, I mean, being able to get across the highway. I mean,
huge.
Being able to come up from the beach to Old Town, that's when, to me, like the rubber meets the road. That's when it gets cool, because then you can, you're down there during dip night, you can pop up to Old Town and shop if that's available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can start to sort of see where things are possible, you know, because where businesses locate, like that group of businesses along the spur just outside of town in Kenai, they all located together, and that sort of helps them, helps their business traffic.
Right.
And so we want to see more like that, where things kind of, you know, we can see things growing, and that's really when we talked about our why, you know, what we can we do to make it healthy and thriving. And, you know, certainly the city can't do a lot but we can foster things.
Right.
You know, we can be helpful.
Provide a platform. Is really what it comes down to, yeah. Well, we're just about out of time this morning, but I want to thank both of you, Paul Ostrander and Christine Cunningham from the City of Kenai. Thank you so much for coming in. This is so much to talk about this morning, and a lot of cool things maybe to look forward to in the coming months, many months, and a lot of, that's Christine smiling, a lot of work going to be passing through her desk, but hopefully it'll be worth it all in the end. So again, Paul Ostrander, Christine Cunningham, thank you so much for being in this morning. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks for having us, Shaylin. Appreciate it.